Welcome. We're glad you've joined us for this Hand in Hand podcast. Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization, and we provide information, classes, training, and lots of support for parents like you. We call our approach Parenting by Connection, and it's based on the insight that you deserve good support as you parent, and every child needs lots of connection in order to thrive. We offer tools to help you foster support for yourself and connection in your family. We hope this podcast gives you exactly the kind of support you're looking for.
So, thanks for taking the time to join us. And as I said, I'm going to do a little introduction. My name's Robin, and my co-presenters are Beth O'Hannison, Pam Otis, and Maya Coleman. And the topic of our teleseminar is how professionals and how we are incorporating these ideas into their work. And Beth and Pam and Maya are, for me, three of the finest practitioners I've met and are lovely women, so we're in good hands here. And Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization founded over 30 years ago by Patty Whitfler, and she had just incredible insights into the emotional needs of children based on many years of real life experience. She had ran an infant toddler center, and she had her own two children, and then she started working with parents and just developed just these rich, incredible tools that really help families. As an organization, we work to bring parents good information, tools, and lots of support for the vital work of parenting. And we also bring these ideas to professionals working closely with families and children. We know that the work of nurturing children can't be easily done in isolation. So one of the big parts of Hand in Hand is building a support network for the parents that we work with. As a nonprofit, we rely on donations to make many of our free resources for parents possible. Free teleseminars like this, free articles on the website on a whole range of topics, free online discussion groups, and access to a wonderful blog with many parent success stories based on this approach. Hand in Hand also offers podcasts, classes, and support groups, both in person and online. These intensive, like the professionals and the parents, and consultations for one-on-one. And scholarships are available for all of the groups and classes. So at Hand in Hand, there are four main ideas behind the approach, which you may have also heard referred to as parenting by connection. The first is that parents need and deserve support for the emotional challenge of parenting. We can build that support and then have much more success meeting both our own needs and our children's needs. The second being that our children are born to feel connected with us. And this sense of connection is what they need in order to learn, to build friendships, and to build resilience and confidence as they grow. The third one is that when children don't feel connected, their behavior goes off track and they signal to us to help. So as we begin to work with these ideas, then we recognize these signals, you know, much more quickly and can respond. And then the fourth, when we foster laughter and play without tickling, set limits without harshness, and support children to have good hearty cries and tantrums, it helps our children feel much more fully connected to us and helps them leave their difficult behaviors behind. So Hand in Hand helps parents strengthen and rebuild the parent-child connection so we can feel successful as we love our children and so our children can thrive on the love that we have for them. And here we're talking about how professionals can work with parents or children and to do the very same things, to really be the kind of parent we want to be and to help the people we work with be the kinds of parents that they want to be. So people are still coming on. Linda, do you want to just introduce yourself again and tell us your work setting? And then if there's any questions that you came on the call with so that as we talk, we might refer to them.
Hi, yes. My name is Linda. I live in Corvallis, Oregon. And I work privately I taught child risk classes for many years and then went back to school to get a master's degree. And I work with postpartum families and children. And I don't have any questions right off the bat. I'm just new to this group, and so I'd like to learn more about it.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah, well, we're glad you're here. And you might hear some beeps as other people come on the call. And it looks like, Pam, I went ahead and muted you here because it sounds like we're still hearing a little bit of noise there. So, yeah, important work. Wow, that's wonderful that you're right there with the families, Linda. That's great, and I hope some things here will be helpful.
Thank you.
So the format of the class is it's an 8-week group, and it usually meets for an hour and 15 to an hour and 45 minutes a week. It's usually a very small group, 4 or 5 people, and yet there are a number of groups happening at the same time, so you're sort of in a larger cohort. And we really like to emphasize that so that you realize that there are many professionals that you can connect up with on the discussion board or look into building listening partnerships with them. So there are online materials, videos that Patty has recorded. There's endless reading that you can't possibly get through, you know, in the 8 weeks. So you have access for many months afterwards. There is much research as we have, you know, we have accessed so far. It's all also on the online material. So as I said, there's a weekly call with one of us. And during that call, there's a check-in and time for question and answers, anything pertinent to your family or your work. And then we talk about the sort of the topic for that week and end the call with listening support for each person on the call. So it's a very, very rich time together where we're all learning from each other, sharing things that we've tried, and then getting to talk about something personal in our lives or something at work and get support for that. And then there's a closing. So that's the format of the call. And for the group. And really the purpose of this call is to let you know as a professional how some other practitioners have incorporated these ideas successfully into their work settings, into their work with families, or with children, and for you to begin to get some ideas for how you might do the same, and for you to ask questions of us as you consider taking part in the Professionals Intensive Program. Let's do short introductions now of the leaders here, and you can let us know your family structure, your work situation, where you are, and I'll go ahead and start. So I'm Robin Sechko, and I'm a licensed marriage family therapist, and I work in Santa Rosa, California, which is about an hour and a half north of San Francisco. And I'd say about half my practice is with parents and half is with individuals. And I also work quite a bit with Hand in Hand, doing consultations, leading the Professionals Intensive and all sorts of other things that I'm asked to do. And let's see. So I work with couples around parenting issues. I speak at many preschools in the area. And, one parent or two parents. And Maya will talk more about this, but I have gone to families' homes, too, to to have pillow fights with them or do special time. And, but really so I'd say, you know, the heart of my work is really, because Hand in Hand has made such a difference in my life, bringing these tools to families and ideas, you know, as soon as we can in their family life. So, Pam, you want to introduce yourself?
I would be delighted. And if you want to go to somebody else, I will not have road noise in about 5 minutes, 3 minutes.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Maya.
Yeah. Great. Thanks. So my name is Maya Coleman. I live in Washington, D.C. with my partner and our 11-year-old daughter, who we adopted at birth here in the U.S., just shortly after her birth here. And we're a multiracial family, and for a period of time, we were also a foster family. And I'm a clinical psychologist in private practice. I work with families of young children, so mainly birth to six, with a specialization in trauma treatment. And I also have a background in special education, and I do a lot of collaboration with teachers and with preschool programs in the area. And I do a fair number of consultations with parents and with professionals through Hand in Hand's consultation program. Yeah, so that's me.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks. And Beth. Let's hear
from you. Okay, great, yes. Hi, thank you, Robin and Maya, for organizing this call, for inviting me to participate. I'm really very excited to talk about how important and fruitful it's been for me to integrate Hand in Hand parenting by connection into my practice. I'm the mother of two children, one who has sensory processing differences, and both of whom are young adults now, both thriving. I live with my husband in San Francisco, and I work here as well. I'm a certified instructor for hand-in-hand parenting by connection, and I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist in clinical practice in San Francisco, California, for over 25 years. I work with adults both individually and in groups, and I specialize now in working with parents of children with sensory processing differences, particularly children who have parents whose children have sensory modulation disorder and are over-responsive and overreact to average stimuli like light touch or scratchy socks or the sound of a vacuum cleaner, and it triggers them to have aggressive behaviors. So although parents come to see me because they feel uncertain about how to respond to the kid's aggressive behavior, I'm not a behaviorist. My graduate education is in clinical psychology with an emphasis on psychoanalytic theory and practice. That's a little bit about me.
Thank you. So, Pam, let's see.
I am no longer driving, so it'll be quieter.
Wonderful.
On my end.
Okay.
Yeah. And I also want to say, thank you to both of you, Robin and Maya, for organizing this. And I, too, am delighted to be a part of this particular team with Hand in Hand. I am a mother of three sons. The oldest is 33, the youngest is 30. Both of them are adopted, not biologic brothers. And one in the middle is 31, who was in foster care and grew up in our household, best friends with our youngest son from when our foster son was second grade through middle school, when he went back to live with his biologic parent. So we did raise three sons from in that period of time that all slept at our house and ate at our house and played sports from our house. And I am still married, seems miraculously, though, to my husband of now 39 years. Really is astounding to me, actually, and happy as ever. I am a pediatrician. I have done primary care pediatrics mostly in Central City, Toledo, Ohio, which is where we have lived since I finished medical school and my residency training. Did primary care outpatient, inpatient, coverage, taught residents, medical students, and then I developed a maternal child pediatric palliative care program at our hospital, incorporating much of what I learned through Hand in Hand, and focused primarily on getting our hospitalized children into primary care physician settings so that they could be cared for well by a practitioner. We were successful enough in what we did with our listening project that we received a federal grant to teach our tools across the state, and all of what we did was based on information and practice from Hand in Hand.
Wow, wonderful. So inspiring to hear what everyone's doing. So, let's see. I forgot to say that my husband and I have two young adults, a son who in a couple of weeks will be 22 and a daughter who in a month will be 25. And so what we're going to do now is we'll just let each of these professionals go a little bit more deeply into how they've incorporated parenting by connection into their practice and ways in which it's enhanced their work. And then we will open the call again for some questions or thoughts or reactions to anything. So, Pam, we'll let you hop back in here.
Okay. Thank you, Robin.
Yeah.
So, in my primary care pediatric work, which was with primarily Central City, Toledo, economically poor families, and 85% were African American, with a smattering of small percentage, probably 5 of Asian American, and similar population of settled out Mexican migrant families, and the rest were white, urban poor, although I also saw physicians' children. We saw physicians' children in our practice as well, and university student, university people's children as well. So the primary use I had of hand-in-hand materials and theory and practice in my practice was to be able to know to listen to parents, to appreciate parents, to be very specific about what I noticed they were doing well, and to ask them how they were doing, and to believe them when they talked about something related to their child or a perception about their child or children. And I also emphasize listening to the children, and that ranged from when I did an exam on an infant who would cry, knowing that certainly in the 6 to 9 month period, 6 to 11 month period with separation anxiety, if I just put my stethoscope between the baby and the parent, usually a mother, would initiate tears. So I did what I could do to minimize separation, to minimize breaking connection, to minimize scaring the baby or the toddler or the school-age child. So I did a lot of my exam on the parent's lap, and all this was things that I learned from Hand in Hand about the importance of connection, especially physical connection in infancy, to minimize me doing damage to a child by frightening them. And when the baby did cry, which they almost always did when I put them on the exam table to complete the exam, to safely look in their ears, to get a good look in their, feel their abdomen. I was relaxed while they cried and always let the parent know that it was a good sign that they should cry if they thought someone was harming them or they felt disconnected from their parent, that crying was the right thing to do. I congratulated the parent who always felt bad. They wanted them, they tried to shush them and make them, you know, quiet. And I said, it's totally fine. And with the mothers in particular, of which I saw most, there were some fathers that came, but it was mostly moms. I asked them how their lives would be different if they had had a chance to cry and to cry out, to let people know that something was wrong when they were sure something was happening that wasn't right and they thought they were being mistreated. And lots of those moms had tears well up in their eyes at that time, or they smiled and said, oh my gosh, yeah, my life would be totally different. So it was a very teachable moment that upset and showing upset was a good thing, not something that needed to be silenced. And I certainly did what I needed to do as quickly as I could do. I wasn't into prolonging the separation at all and returned the infant to the mother or the father's arms with assurance that it was fine for that baby to cry. That was a good thing. And certainly preparing them for tears when they got their immunizations. Shots hurt. And it's important for that baby toddler to have a chance to cry thoroughly about that experience. And we certainly can see children who don't have a chance to do that. Some start crying the minute they pull into the parking lot of the physician's office because of the memory of having been hurt there before and not having had a chance to cry it through. So that was a big part of what I have enjoyed doing with families for many years. And assuring them that when the child cries, it's for a reason we might not understand, but that it is always for a reason. And to the extent we can listen, be confident in the child's well-being, be pleased, relaxed, obviously be certain that there isn't something wrong, that they don't have a pin sticking them or a shoe that's tied too tight, not that the tears after we have ascertained that all is well are welcome. I also had chances to play in the office. There are children who come in and hide, quote unquote, in the exam room and that I can't see, quote unquote, when I come in, and they are giggling and laughing and I still can't find them, and so that I actually get to play and laugh and be delighted with them and their parents, who are sometimes very embarrassed, in a playful way, and encourage that with families as well. When older children had relational issues, which isn't uncommon, and it may have been a child, you know, school-age child, 8 or 9 year old, who had issues with stooling or bladder issues or abdominal pain or headaches. I often spent time, again, being sure that there weren't medical issues that we needed to address, and then investigated their relationship, learned about their relationship, and just in the exam room had the each of them let the other know something about them that they liked. And there would be embarrassment and laughter and always plenty of things that, that they liked about each other. And then I could give a prescription for doing special time at home where the parent would do play whatever it is that the young person wanted to play, not ever suspending judgment or jeopardizing safety, but playing without fixing or teaching or improving the game. And just, I have just loved watching those relationships blossom. And that was not an easy thing for a lot of our parents to do. They were not, that was not easy. And so encouragement, congratulations. So those are a few things. And similar in the hospital with children going through procedures in the hospital, parents facing the death of a child, the death of a newborn, focusing on emphasizing the importance of grieving thoroughly, that it was okay, and that people could make very, very good decisions about what was in their child's best interest much better after they'd had big chances to cry. So that's a little bit. I've loved it. I am convinced it's my husband and I are still married 39 years later because of the tools that we were able to use with our own children and with each other, the listening tools. And adoption and foster care are not great setups for successful children, but I have our three are in graduate school, very successful careers, and really, really good relationships with people. One is married, has three children. They all are successful young men.
Thank you, Pam. So delightful to hear and to picture you in the exam room. So thank you so much. And Maya, how about you?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Pam. I always just love to hear about your work. So great. I had spent some significant amount of my training time in the Children's Hospital here in D.C. in the NICU, and I just love hearing about how you work with children in those kinds of environments. So as I mentioned, I'm actually in private practice now in D.C., and most of the children I work with are 3 to 5, and families are generally referred to me by their preschools, mostly because of kind of regulatory challenges. So they're hitting their friends, they're tantruming, they're, you know, physically overactive, they're having trouble settling, attentional problems, or having difficulty with transitions and kind of doing what's, you know, happening in preschool. So it's often the case that these kind of regulation challenges are the residue of kind of earlier difficult experiences. So I end up working with a lot of children who have had different kinds of traumas or different kinds of just early challenges. So children who have spent time in the NICU, have had difficulties around birth, have had early separations, so join their families through adoption or have spent time in foster care, children who've had kind of significant medical interventions kind of early on, and then families are kind of coming to me when the residue of those experiences makes it challenging to kind of be in a classroom environment and kind of managing those, you know, separations from their parents and the transitions and all the things that are kind of happening in preschool. So what I do is I just help parents and teachers kind of help children manage their emergency response systems, their dysregulation that is kind of the hallmark of early challenges. And children's, you know, systems might be getting triggered off kind of more easily, or maybe just sort of stuck in the on position, so that they're just frequently in fight or flight mode. And so that's how children are kind of coming to me initially. I have good connections with school counselors and teachers in a lot of the preschools in the area. And I do, so I consult with teachers, I consult with preschool programs kind of about tweaking things in the classroom to kind of bring in some of the parenting by connection tools into the classroom. So it looks, you know, looks different kind of in a classroom environment, but I really love kind of working with teachers and helping to figure out how to set up a classroom environment that's really, trauma sensitive, really, that fosters connection, that fosters support and regulation and emotional expression and kind of the resetting when children's systems get activated. And so I get to do classroom observations and coordinate with teaching teams and with special education teams. And I also do a fair amount of home-based work. So I'm working with parents to bring these tools on board at home. I'd say about 90% of what I do with families is actually parenting by connection, and kind of bringing these tools on board, because I really think this parenting program and this caregiving approach it's a trauma-informed parenting program, and I help parents in parenting children who are having some of this residue from earlier experiences. So I go into the house and I'm doing special time with parents and with their children, and I'm doing play listening, and I'm helping parents set limits, and I'm helping parents kind of hang in and anchor their children and support when emotions are high, when feelings come up. And so really I don't actually work with children separately. I'm always working with children and their parents and focused on helping them strengthen their relationship. So it's not so much about their connection with me as sort of the therapist, but I'm really supporting their connection. And sort of might be helpful to hear a little bit about like what this actually looks like for a particular child. So I thought I would talk a little bit about a child whose family I've been working with for the last year or so. and all kinds of really neat things have happened for this family over the course of the year, and they've just done some amazing work. And so it'll give you kind of a sense of how I work with families. So this is a child who got connected with me when she was a late three-year-old, and she was in a preschool classroom. She was actually the youngest person in that particular classroom. And she is at a preschool that I do a lot of work with. It's really a phenomenal preschool. They have incredible teachers and a really good school counselor, and you know, they just have lots and lots of good things set up at the school. But what was happening is that this little girl was just having lots of difficulties in the classroom with hitting friends, with pushing kids out of teacher's laps if a teacher was kind of attending to another student. It was really hard for her to kind of tolerate that, and so she would try and push children out of teacher's laps. She was sometimes destroying things in the classroom, and she would often withdraw, actually, so she would kind of sit by herself and pop her thumb in and hold on to her stuffed animal and really just kind of withdraw from what was happening in the classroom. So it was a combination of kind of withdrawal and these sort of periodic lashing out. But she was having just a really hard time kind of engaging with the teachers, absolutely with engaging with other kids. It was sort of like there were not necessarily other kids in the classroom in her mind, just people getting in the way of her being able to connect with a teacher. So the school suggested that the family get connected with me. And just a little about her history, this child was adopted shortly after birth, and her parents had actually separated just a few months before I started working with them. And parents both had jobs where they were doing lots and lots of traveling and would be gone for like chunks of time, a week or more at a time. And what was happening at home is that she was just really, really rejecting of her parents whenever there was a transition between the two of them. It was sort of a classic, it was all the kind of classic kinds of sort of disorganized attachment behaviors. It's not like we evaluated her attachment status, but it was all of those kinds of things, it being very difficult for her to figure out kind of how to connect up and how to tolerate separation. And she was just having lots and lots of difficulty in school, particularly when her parents were traveling. So I got connected up with them, did a classroom observation to sort of see her there in that setting before we met each other, before she knew kind of who I was. So I usually try and do the classroom observation before starting with the home-based work. And then we just jumped right into pretty intensive home-based work. So what was nice is the family was really, really motivated, really wanting to kind of jump in and had the resources to be able to do that. So this is, there are only some families that I'm able to work with kind of this intensively, but it really made a difference to be able to do that with this family. So I ended up doing a home-based session twice a week with them. They also had a nanny who was providing a significant amount of care and who actually lived in sort of a house connected to their house. So I would do special time one day a week with the mom and the child, and one day a week with the dad and the child, both at her house where she was. And the nanny was there both days, and so we would set up a chunk of special time with me and the mom and the child, and then another chunk with me and the nanny and the child, and then I would get to debrief with the mom while the child was playing with the nanny, and then we'd swap off. So it's kind of an ideal situation where we were able to do special time and have a little debrief time kind of after the sessions. And the way I set up sessions is I go in and we're doing special time, and the parents and I are offering the child special time. And all kinds of things just come up in that setting. Often we're doing some play listening during that time, or we're doing some stay listening, or we're needing to set limits on dangerous behavior. And it's sort of like the frame is that I'm coming in to do special time. So it was really interesting to see how she used her special time. And at the beginning of kind of working with the family, it was a lot of just physical movement. So lots of jumping on the bed, slightly frenetic kind of activity, not especially interactive, lots of kind of hiding of her stuffed animals, and I would bring in sometimes some play listening tools. So sometimes I would bring in sort of indoor snowballs so that we could have, indoor snowball fights. And it was really interesting. They were not interactive in the way that, that this sort of pulls for. She would take them and just sort of throw them down the stairs, but not sort of get something going between us. Then the play kind of moved to much more sort of connected play, where, she and her mom would run from me together. And I would need to sort of chase them around the house, and they would run away and be successful. Then she sort of moved into, as things were changing at school and she was really being able to connect with her teachers, she was then able to kind of look out and notice the other children in her classroom. And so the play at home shifted in special time to excluding one of us in special time. So we would get, locked in a closet, not really, but we would get, we'd have to stay in this room while she and, the other person went and played in a different room. It was just lots of themes of exclusion, and where, I would sort of be desperately lonely, hoping to get included in the play, and she could laugh and just kind of play with those connection and exclusion dynamics. She got into a game called an I don't love you game, where she would say to one of us, I don't love you, and that would kind of trigger off the well, I love you, I'm going to have to come and find you and give you 100 kisses. And she would run away and escape. And she was actually eliciting kind of those interactive games. And these days, what her play looks like is she sends us to jail. So we have to go to jail, but it's the best experience of being in jail I've ever had. And she brings us things to eat and books to read and toys to play with, and it's like the most nurturing, caring kind of jail that you can imagine. So her play and her connections have shifted so dramatically over the course of this last year. And her greetings of her parents when, you know, when one of them arrives or when I arrive look totally different than they did a year ago. It's like, this is what a really secure attachment looks like at reunion. And, you know, she's just, things have improved completely at school. The teachers say, you know, she's just like a completely different child, and she's very thoughtful and caretaking, actually, of some of the younger children in her class. So anyway, hopefully that just gives you a little picture of what this can look like in this setting, in a private practice. And, you know, I just want to mention that, you know, in terms of the professionals intensive, one thing I really love about leading one of the call groups is the opportunities to work with people in all different kinds of settings and from all different kinds of disciplines. So, you know, it's just really interesting kind of to be with a group of other people really from all over the world. I mean, I've worked with psychologists in Hungary and Mexico and, you know, people in Ireland and the UK and Australia and, you know, people from all over the world and people with all different kinds of training. So other psychologists and, you know, midwives and early childhood educators and, you know, neonatal nurse practitioners and OTs and physical therapists. And it's just like fascinating to think about and to just see kind of how people are bringing these tools into all these different contexts. So anyway, it would be great to, you know, to have you join the professionals intensive, and just wanted to make sure, you know, you're really welcome, kind of from a wide range of sort of professional backgrounds. So good. So I think,
thanks, Maya. Huh?
Yeah.
Mess.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, okay. Good. Okay. So sorry.
Sure.
Sorry to worry you there.
Yeah,
I was just saying that I've just had my chin resting on my hand here, just riveted to the story, Maya, and also listening to your story, Pam, of being in the hospital with crying babies. It's really wonderful to get to hear everything. So this is just great. Let's see. So it's my turn to talk about how I've integrated Hands in Hand into my practice and how it's enhanced my practice. So I work exclusively with parents in my office, and their children are age from 2 to 15 generally. And the primary referral source that I have is from the Sensory Neurodevelopment and Autism Program in the Department of Neurology at University of California in San Francisco Medical School. Even though the neurologists in that department, I'm thinking about particularly my friend Elisa Marco, who defines herself, she's a cognitive and behavioral child neurologist who's a part-time researcher and clinical practitioner. She sends me all of the families whose children do not respond to behavioral strategies. And I wouldn't recommend behavioral strategies from the get-go, but it's really satisfying and wonderful to end the day really feeling like I have helped a family begin to calm down when there's lots of chaos and aggressive behavior, particularly happening in their home, to use the hand-in-hand parenting by connection tools to interact with their children in a way that builds connection instead of builds distance when times are tough at home. So the way that I've integrated hand-in-hand into my practice, I teach hand-in-hand parenting by connection tools to individuals, parents, parent couples, grandparents, extended family members, and nannies or au pairs. I use the very well-structured group format that hand-in-hand has designed and facilitate groups for parents of children with sensory processing disorder, which is something, by the way, I mean, this has enhanced my practice because individual psychotherapy or individual parent work does not decrease the isolation that parents feel when their kid has some differences or when their kid is, is the troublemaker in school or when they have the child who's hitting other children or biting or kicking. This could be so heartbreaking. So the group format is very containing. I use it to the letter of how it was designed, and it's wonderful to see parents nurture each other. I have one ongoing group that's been meeting for about 5 years, and at this point, honestly, I'm not even sure why they pay me. It's just such a pleasure to be with this group of moms. I also do trainings for preschool parents and teachers, and have taught in a couple of settings in graduate schools here in San Francisco for students who have internships with children and families, and that's been fun. Very specifically in relation to integrating the hand-in-hand tools, I combine the tool of play listening with the occupational therapy strategies that are prescribed for kids with sensory processing differences, so that parents are weaving in their warmth and their connection while the child is essentially doing the treatment that they need. And in addition to that, can be working on their emotional projects. If we think about aggression, they can be jumping up and down on the trampoline, which is what they need for proprioceptive input. It helps them regulate emotionally and neurologically. It also releases aggression because they can just yell about all the reasons they're mad at their teacher and they do think they should have a right to pull their brother's hair and so on and so forth. And, you know, the parents just get to say, tell me all about it. Keep jumping. Tell me all about it. And it's fun and three things were happening at the same time, so it's a really great use of parents' time. I use teach special time to parents to really reinforce them giving themselves time to just enjoy their child as a joy in their life rather than a neurological challenge to be fixed. And this is as nurturing for parents as it is for the kids. Maya's story also really spoke to that. And of course, the tools of limit setting and stay listening are just crucial to the families that I work with because everyone has a right to feel safe in the house when aggressive behaviors are happening. They are calling for a limit and calling for containment and appreciation that that child is doing the very best they can neurologically in that moment. They're not bad, nor is the parent bad because it's happening. So I want to also just underscore that one of the great things that I've also really appreciated about hand-in-hand parenting is that although I love analytic theory, which I really do, I'm kind of a theory, nerd. I love Winnicott and Beon and Klein and attachment theory of John Bowlby and Mary Ainsworth. I, you know, it's not, that's not what patients, clients want to hear. And so Hand in Hand has really helped me translate what I've learned in my clinical training back into friendly, warm, intelligent language that parents can make use of. So instead of talking about a child's dysregulated affect, we just talk about, you know, their big feelings. Instead of talking about their child's or their the need for them to co-regulate their dysregulated child, we talk about their child's need for emotional connection and that they're signaling the parent for emotional connection and safety when they're exhibiting off-track behavior, aggressive behavior. So I know we're running short on time, and I was going to try to speak to the question from the person from Romania, but I'm not sure that we have time for that. Robin, what do you think?
Well, let's see. Why don't we, if there's anyone who has to leave right now and has a question or a comment or wants to say goodbye, let's do that. And then if people can stay an extra 5 minutes, I'd love to have you do that. And then I can share a few things, you know, about how I incorporate. So let's check in. Is there anyone who has to hop off right now and has a question or wants to make a comment? Okay, wonderful. So go ahead, Beth, because I would love to hear that.
Okay, so so back me up here, Robin, if I think I have the question correctly, and I'm sorry, was it a person from Romania or Armenia? I couldn't quite hear.
Oh, it's Romania.
Romania, okay, that's exciting. Okay.
Yes, yeah. Hand in Hand is really taking off in Romania.
That's great.
It's really taking off,
You have a good, strong Romanian contingent. That's great.
Yes.
So let's see. I'm not sure of what your name was, but thank you very much for this question. You asked how can a psychotherapist use the listening partnership tool in sessions with parents when the parent is discussing very difficult experiences. So when is it important to just listen, and when is it possible to offer a closer look at the trauma the parent has experienced themselves in the past? And so it's just such a great question, because this is really speaks to the complexity of the work of doing psychotherapy. And I think that we are always reaching towards caring well for the child and also reaching back to the parent for how they are caring well for themselves as a child. And that all of those things are happening at once. And the art of psychotherapy is really when to listen and when to offer an interpretation. And I think one of the beautiful things that Hand in Hand has offered me as a person who was trained in the art of interpretation is that we often interpret when there's no need to at all. And, you know, many, many great theoreticians have talked about this. You know, Winnicott has talked about it. You know, get out of the patient's way, you know. Don't just interpret to listen to yourself talk. So I try to anchor my work in listening to what my client is saying, listening to the call for help and the fear underneath aggression. And, you know, and that includes, I'll just say, like a dad this week who stood up as he was leaving the session and said, what makes you the expert in this area, and what gives you the right to suggest this parenting strategy? I mean, really leaning over, pointing at me, yelling, and I was just listening to his aggressive, his aggressive thoughts and actions, just really hearing the deep fear in his voice that he will never connect with his child, that he's losing the capacity to love his child, but actually that it matters deeply to him. And that helped me be able to just listen very openly and say, I want to hear all about that. So we're always listening to unconscious process and to communications that are expressed in the frame of treatment. And I'm also always trying to listen to how I feel when I'm with a client and listen to something of what my own associations are to what my patients are talking about. So, in other words, I'm trying to notice, am I becoming re-stimulated by something that they're saying? I just want them to stop. I want to give them an answer. I can't take anymore, which is an indication that I need listening time. I need supervision. And if I can notice that in the moment, I can listen and appreciate that my patient is pouring out her emotion. She's doing her work. And my work is to hold steady and listen and offer that confidence and warmth. So, you know, it's not a direct answer because it's a complicated and very interesting question. I hope that helps a little bit. And thank you so much for asking it.
Great. Thank you, Beth. Wow, what a rich call. Yeah, so I'm just going to briefly talk about how I've incorporated in mine, and then we'll open it again to see if anyone has anything final to say, presenters and participants, and then we'll close. And I would say for me that through my experience at Hand in Hand, just the contact with the people, with the ideas, that the quality of my listening as a therapist, as a practitioner, is very, very different. And that I've really come to understand the incredible value for parents of uninterrupted time to speak, to think, to feel, to sort things out. And in some ways, what you're talking about, that's the very thing that I'm going to hold that space sacred, to find the feelings, to allow the feelings to express so that they can go in the same sort of arc that our children are going to go into, down into the feeling and up out of it, to find their equilibrium again and to, you know, find their love for their child. And then one other thing is just how I think about it now is really entering, as I work with each parent, each or even a couple, I'm entering into a relationship in such a way that as a practitioner, I can make the safety enough, the warmth enough, really offer the finest ideas I've ever come across. And in that relationship, what I can say is that healing happens and transformation happens. And it's happened for me, and I love that I can be in that process with parents. And one last thing is that what I love about leading the groups is the sense of community on the calls, a small group. And the community is just magnificent, and it's rare. And so many of us as professionals that we work in isolation, even if we're in an agency, and we're really we're the art, we're the medium, it's us and what we bring. And so to have this kind of support that you can get from the greater community at Hand in Hand is, I haven't found it anywhere, so it's really valuable for me, and I love to include new people who come to the professionals intensive in that. So I'll stop there, and let's just open it again. Anything that Beth, Maya, Pam, you want to add, or any participants, anything you want to say? And Linda, we're happy to hear from you because we were introduced to you at the beginning. And jump on in, anyone.
This is Linda again. Thank you so much. I just really enjoyed listening to you, and it makes me excited about wanting to get more involved in the program. So thank you.
You're so welcome. We'd love to have you. Anyone else? So just as a wrap up, the Professionals Intensive is an 8-week program. There will be groups starting in January. There are many time options. It's really very personalized guidance to incorporate the tools into your family life and your work setting. And in addition, until then, lots of free resources on the site, articles, podcasts, discussion groups, Facebook groups, blog postings, one-on-one consultations with experienced instructors, self-guided classes on aggression, sleep issues, separation anxiety, setting limits, sibling rivalry, and then also Patty Whitfler and Tasha Shore's book called Listen, 5 Simple Tools to Meet Your Everyday Parenting Challenges is available on the website. So thank you for being here, and we hope this is helpful, and we look forward to our paths crossing with you in the future.
Thanks for joining us. Hand in Hand is here to help you get the support you need for your work as a parent. To download podcasts on additional parenting topics, go to handinhandparenting.org/store. We look forward to connecting with you again soon.